I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people about sharing the faith and about tracking threats to religious communication both online and on the air. Join us, sit back, and enjoy some free expression. Podcasts may be the last bastion of free thought and open discussion on the internet. The fact that content is spoken rather than printed makes podcasts hard to track and monitor. Consequently, trolls who surf the web looking for objectionable speech or so-called misinformation feel frustrated. While this may be all changing, Issues and Insights, a great online source of conservative commentary, recently noted a sign of possible danger ahead. The Brookings Institution, that well-known liberal think tank, has developed a database of political podcasts. Critics speculate that the intention is to make it easier to identify online voices that may tend to stray from certain approved lines of thought. Terry Jones represents the Issues and Insights editorial board, and he's with us. Terry, is this really a red flag for those of us who were involved in podcasting?
Yeah, I think it is a red flag. It's one of many red flags out there right now, quite frankly, because we have on a number of fronts attempts by both government and private sector actors, including think tanks like the Brookings Institution, to identify speech they don't like and remove it from the public realm. This is a big problem when they start looking and start identifying your speech as problematic, because the identification is always a prelude later to taking action against what you're doing. It may seem not so obvious now, and it may seem almost harmless, but I guarantee you it's not harmless in the long run. These are real threats to our free speech rights under the First Amendment of the Constitution.
Yeah, those of us involved, particularly in religious broadcasting, have sort of been edgy about this whole thing as we've seen the cancel culture philosophy gathers steam. Do you think that there may be a special focus on Christian-oriented podcasts?
I certainly believe that could be true. You know, one of the problems we have today is that society has become increasingly secular. We've already seen what has happened with the ability to discuss religion in public spaces. It went from Congress shall make no rule abridging your right to practice your religion or to for government to establish religion to it being forbidden for anybody with any religious views to state something in the public realm that is explicitly religious. They say that's a violation of the separation of church and state, which exists nowhere in the Constitution. It exists only in people's minds. So, yeah, I think the threats to religious belief are particularly strong, given that so many of those who would clip our wings when it comes to freedom of speech are people who are quite frankly, not believers in a God of the kind we are.
What seems particularly notorious about this is this alliance that has taken place between government and the high-tech companies. If government moved directly against religious broadcasters or Christian podcasters, there might be a lot of political flack, but they seem to be hiding behind the Facebooks of the world to do their dirty work for them.
Yeah, it's an alarming thing. That is a genuinely unconstitutional act, in my opinion, and I'm sure in most legal scholars' opinions as well. The Department of Homeland Security is basically established links with Facebook and Instagram and no doubt others, Twitter. These are supposedly independent private sector actors, and it turns out that they're acting in concert with the federal government to choke off free speech. They even have a portal at Facebook for government officials to sign in and say, hey, we would like this taken down. Now, that to me is an explicit violation of the First Amendment, and I'm surprised it hasn't made its way to being heard in the court. I know the Department of Homeland Security created a disinformation department, essentially, to comb through all these various sources of information and find the things that they thought were really dangerous, everything from, you know, COVID-19 to talking about the Afghanistan withdrawal made their list. Those are things that are topical and debatable, and the idea that the government is trying to squelch any kind of conversation about these very controversial items, many of them created or caused by the government, is very, very troubling to me.
It does seem that it's hard to get people to really stand up and resist the incident that you talk about, what was jokingly referred to as the Ministry of Truth. The government attempted this, but then backed away when there was a political reaction. But I talk with so many people who are, if aware at all, they're only dimly aware that this is going on. How do you raise people's consciousness to demonstrate the danger that we're facing?
You really have to write about it a lot and make the point, because otherwise it gets lost in the welter of information they hear. And there's so many media distractions today, and people don't. You know, it's very difficult for people to separate the valuable stuff from the less valuable stuff. And so you really have to make a persistent effort, I think, to bring it to people's attention, because it is a very clear and present danger to one of our most essential freedoms, which is the freedom to write and say what we wish, as long as we don't, the old thing, going into a theater and yelling fire and that kind of thing. Otherwise, political speech is entirely protected. Nonviolent speech, where you're not essentially calling for the overthrow of the government, is protected. These are things that we need to have, and we need to continue to have, in order for us to have a functioning republic, one that ensures everyone's rights under the law. Once we start abridging or eroding these rights one by one by one, the Bill of Rights all of a sudden becomes a Bill of Wrongs. It becomes something that is no longer meaningful, because if federal government can intervene whenever it wants and remove your rights, well, then we really don't have any rights at all. It's just a pretty document that we, bow to but don't live by.
A lot of hopes have been raised by Elon Musk and his purchase of Twitter. I don't know what that really indicates. Musk doesn't strike me as being a person who's politically motivated. What are your feelings? Do you think that'll have a positive effect long term?
I think it will. For one thing, I think many of the other big tech social media sites sort of on edge, because a lot of them are not doing that well right now financially, in particular Facebook, because it's the owner of Meta, or the main owner of Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, is focused on a virtual reality project that is causing massive expenditures and for probably very little ultimate gain. So, I mean, I think a lot of these companies are a little concerned that they might be on the chopping block at some point, or maybe sold out to somebody else. And so I think it might have a chastening effect on them. I hope so, certainly. And I think Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter will have a very salutary effect. He's not a religious person, at least as far as I can tell, but he has political beliefs all over the board, but he has been a very steadfast supporter of free speech rights, and that was the main reason he took over Twitter, was because he saw people who were making slightly controversial comments being basically deplatformed for it. And that's in essence an attempt to erase their right to free speech.
Well, you guys have been waving the flag for free speech and personal liberty for a long time. Tell us a little bit about Issues and Insights. It comes out of Investor's Business Daily, right?
Yeah, we were the editorial page creator created in the 1990s by Investors Business Daily and its founder, William J. O'Neill, who wanted an editorial page that would hew more to the conservative side of things, because he felt, and you have to remember, he himself was a lifelong Democrat, but he felt that the conversation in the media and in the press had become so one-sided that nobody was hearing the other side. So he wanted to have an editorial page that would responsibly put forward the conservative case for free markets, for individual liberty, for the protection of our rights as citizens. Those were the things that we were sort of, that was our charter for us to do, and that we felt very comfortable with that, largely because our editor, Wes Mann, was very, I would say, arduous in creating the kind of editorial page that our founder wanted. We were all very strongly mission-oriented because we all believed in the basic ideals of the page. And over the years, it was highly successful and often highly controversial. But finally, the newspaper started going into a different direction when a new owner took over. So the page was shut down, and the remnants of it, that would be me and two of my colleagues, basically took it over and made it a standalone website, because we still felt we had things to say.
Well, it certainly seems that you're personally motivated. You're very much concerned about First Amendment rights, both in terms of freedom of speech and religious freedom. You're a convert to Catholicism.
I am. I was raised as a sort of an indeterminate Protestant, but I was always, my entire life, even when I was young and somewhat left of center, I was always a believer in God. I never strayed from that, really. There were times when I didn't feel his presence as much, but I was always a believer. It always made sense to me. And so when I got married, had a daughter, I wanted her to be brought up in a church. And my wife was Catholic, and I was not Catholic. I was a Missouri Synod Lutheran. So I went through the RCIA program, the inculcation of Catholic ideas and whatnot, and I was surprised at how long and rigorous it was. It was 2 years. Maybe they just needed to work on me a little longer. I don't know, but it was an enlightening experience, and I was really happy to join a church that had 2,000 years of history and that whole background of deliberation on things, both in metaphysical sense but also in the practical sense of how churches operate and whatnot. I was very happy to become a Catholic, and I still am.
Well, having made that journey and given the perspective that you have because of it, what's your sense of how Catholics are responding to the things that are happening, the cancel culture, the politicization of everything? Catholics are often reluctant to express their views and become actively involved. What do you think the future holds for the church?
Yeah, well, I think, and this is my this is only a personal opinion, and I don't have any deep expertise, but to me, I always look at, having attended a number of Catholic church functions and whatnot and talk to people, Catholics strike me as being personally conservative, but oftentimes politically liberal. So I think sometimes they sort of see things happening that they say, well, that's okay for me. I don't care. But I think one of the problems that Catholics have in this world is that they take a lot of shots about things that go on in the Catholic Church, and oftentimes, because they're decent, kind, self-facing, inward-looking people, I don't think they defend themselves strongly enough. Yeah, the Church is an imperfect institution, largely because all things on Earth are imperfect. There's nothing perfect on Earth. Still, there are many things that the church does that are wonderful and helpful and generous and giving, and that you never see that in the newspapers at all. You never see that covered or discussed or anything like that. It's only when something goes wrong in the church that you see the stories come out, and then it becomes a big crisis for the church. I think it undermines people's faith frankly, to be under continual assault in the media. It saddens me because I think the Catholic Church does a lot of things that are really wonderful in the world, and most people never hear about it. They don't know about the clinics in poor countries. They don't know about the help that they give to people to build things and the hope they give to people on a daily basis. Those things just get sort of passed over. It's only when something goes wrong or something bad happens that we get the coverage.
Well, maybe we can help motivate Catholics to become a bit more outspoken by encouraging them to follow Issues and Insights. Where can they find you guys?
You can find us on the web. And, you know, we have more than just our little inside group writing editorials. We take outside submissions, and we do it on a variety of topics. We write about everything, ranging from sports and Hollywood to foreign affairs and a lot on economics. That was something that we focused a lot on in our early years under Investor's Business Daily. And that was something of a specialization of ours. So we frequently write about economics or have other people write about them.
Yeah, it's a very informative and helpful website. It's really great. Terry Jones of Issues and Insights, thank you very much. Keep your ear to the ground and be sure to let us know if there are any new threats to podcasts or any other form of free expression.
I sure will, Bill. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you and your audience.
My bishop has been urging all the parishioners of our diocese to become what he calls missionary disciples in presenting the Catholic faith. Well, good luck with that, Bishop. Catholics have a long history of depending on their priests and nuns to handle all that evangelistic stuff. It's my observation that even Catholics who are deeply pious and actively involved in church life tend to be less forthcoming about their faith than, say, evangelical Protestants are. A new study would appear to confirm this traditional reticence. Dave Plisky represents DeSales Media, the New York-based Catholic information company that conducted this survey. Dave, what exactly did the study find?
Yeah, hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on. One of the most significant findings that we found in the study is that of this audience segment of intentional disciples or missionary disciples, as you call them, or simply devout Catholics, found that nearly one in five, 18%, are uncomfortable talking about their faith with others, which, like you said, kind of confirms what you're saying. Although that does seem that 82% are at least slightly comfortable, so there's some room for hope. But, you know, this is the most devout Catholics among us. So if they're not talking about the faith, you know, who is?
How was this conducted? Was this a phone survey or mail or what? How did it work?
We started with a qualitative study, which basically was in-depth interviews with people we felt to be intentional disciples. And then we kind of launched into the quantitative portion, which was an online survey that was conducted over the course of most of 2021. And that allowed us to receive over 3,000 responses from this highly targeted and honestly difficult to reach segment of Catholics.
Did it give you any insights into why this situation is as it is? What is it about Catholics and their unwillingness to talk about the things that they believe?
It's a good question. And by the way, I do want to make the, I will answer it, but I want to make a distinction between comfortability and proactivity. So while 18% are uncomfortable talking about their faith, only 52% are moderately or extremely proactive in doing so. But we asked why. It's a great question. You know, we kind of called it the barriers to evangelization, right? Barriers to faith sharing. The number one response was situational appropriateness. But following that, we also heard that lack of confidence, lack of knowing how to start conversations, not wanting to offend, and lack of experience in doing so were the top reasons why people felt that they had barriers to evangelization.
So it would seem that there's a catechetical issue here in a way. Perhaps if people were better informed about the specifics of the faith, they'd be more inclined to share?
Absolutely. I, I think there's very much reason to believe that all Catholics need ongoing formation, and even those who are, you know, are lay leaders and are particularly devout Catholics do so. Thankfully, many of them are interested. So we also asked about that, and we found that 76% of this audience are moderately or extremely interested in developing their evangelization skills.
You did uncover a couple of interesting facts, one of which I find relevant to my concerns, since I'm doing a radio show, which is also distributed as a podcast. Apparently, podcasts have really become kind of an evangelistic tool.
Yeah, they really have. We asked about the types of faith aids that people use to go deeper in their faith. So two interesting findings there. One is that only 6% use just physical or just digital methods. So most people, they use complementary resources, both physical and digital methods. Physical, most commonly the Bible, so that's a good thing, and I think maybe to be expected. But the digital one is podcasts, like you said, to really become popular.
Well, is there a bottom line conclusion on this that you could pass on to our bishops? What should the church be doing based on all of this?
I think there's two different parties that we can talk to. So when you talk about your bishop, we're talking about the institutional church. And I think what also kind of we could loop in there other ministries, even lay-led ministries that are trying to, you know, make an impact on Catholics' faith lives. And so, you know, what can they be doing? Well, the findings of this report, I think, show some white space, let's say, of places that maybe are not being as well handled as they could be, because it seems that this audience segment, these devout Catholics, do have room to grow in certain areas. And I can go into those in a minute. And then I think for just the average Catholic, you know, in the pews, what can they do with this information? Well, it's important to another kind of thing that we looked at is what are the faith journeys of these devout Catholics look like? So not only can I help model my own faith journey more like this, and it may help me grow deeper in my faith, but also to recognize others who may be interested in going down this path more deeply and say, okay, wow, that's a person who's a couple steps away from being a leader. Let's help them to thrive and grow. Let's kind of latch onto them.
DeSales Media is one of those lay-led ministries that's providing information and helpful guidance. Tell us about your company and the work that you do.
Sure. So we're based in Brooklyn, New York, and we do a whole bunch of different things. We do the diocese newspaper, so it's kind of New York's Catholic newspaper in English, and we also have a Spanish one. We do a nightly newscast called Currents News that you can watch on Net TV, which is a terrestrial linear television station that we also do. We create content for that television station. One of our big projects right now that I think has pretty wide appeal is called The Chair. It's a television show that's actually a series, I should say. We went around to 85 different dioceses, and we interviewed each bishop and talked to him about Catholicism in his region to understand what is the Catholic Church like, past, present, and future, in this area, kind of telling the story of the Catholic Church in America. So people can go and watch that for free. You can go to thechair.com/watch now. In other areas, we also do education. So we give grants to Catholic schools in our area in New York to make sure that they're competitive with the best private schools. We do agency services, so marketing, video production, press and media relations for different ministries of the church and the diocese. And finally, we do technology. We help parishes, schools, et cetera, basically modernize their communications technology so they can do a better job reaching the faithful.
Well, if pastors or religious educators want to tap into this survey information, perhaps to gain some insights into how they can improve their own ministries, is your report available online as well?
Absolutely. It's also available for free. So our website is DeSales Media, DeSales like St. Francis DeSales. So DeSales Media.org/discipleship.
Dave Plisky, DeSales Media, thanks an awful lot for talking about this. You've uncovered some really interesting insights about how Catholics think about their faith, something that people ought to dig deeper into.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Bill.
Because I've known all the emptiness life can be. Because I've seen all that faith can achieve. because I've viewed from afar what believers see. I believe, in spite of hope long abandoned and dreams outgrown, despite my words that deny and deceive, in spite of all the confusion and doubt I've known, because it opens my mind to perceive, because I finally know that it's good for me, I believe. What a new life to begin. How great I've found there are things worth believing in. I believe, because I've found there are things worth believing in. I believe.
There's a song that shares personal faith experiences, I Believe, off of my 2006 album, On This Mountain. Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.